I call Senate Resources Committee meeting to order. Today is Friday, March 31st, 2023. The time is 3:31 p.m. Committee members present, Senators Klayman, Senator Dunbar, Senator Kaufman, Co-Chair Senator Bishop, and myself, Senator Giesel. I believe Senator Kawasaki will be joining us. Senator Wilikowski is on other business. We have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you so much to Carrie Cooper Ryder and Talia Eames, who are here helping us make this committee meeting happen. Please take a moment to silence your cell phones. So on today's agenda, we are looking at a Cook Inlet update related to oil and gas issues. So in February, the committee heard from the Department of Natural Resources about a gas update, availability of gas in Cook Inlet. After that meeting, as a result of it, questions arose about the tax structure currently implemented in Cook Inlet. So today, the Department of Revenue is here on that very topic to answer our questions. So I would welcome Mr. Dan Stickle, Chief Economist from the Department of Revenue, to come to the table. Ms. Colleen Glover, who is the Tax Division Director from the Department of Revenue, is online, I'm sure. This little iPad. There we go. Yes, there is Ms. Glover. So welcome, Mr. Stickle. Please put yourself on the record, and you've presented us with a PowerPoint. We look forward to hearing.
Absolutely. For the record, Dan Stickle, I'm Chief Economist with the Department of Revenue. And as you mentioned, we have our Tax Director online. I believe our Deputy Commissioner, Fadil Lamani, is also going to be calling online if there's any policy questions that come up. So thank you for the opportunity to come before the committee and present our Cook Inlet update presentation.
Mr. Stickle, could you pause for a moment?
Yes.
Is the audio actually on? Because I'm hardly hearing him. I mean, okay. Just seemed a little, I don't know, quiet.
Sure. Is that better?
Oh. Yes, but you don't.
That is better.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Stickle.
All right, so thank you for the opportunity to come before the committee and present our Cook Inlet update presentation. Slide 2 is a list of acronyms. We like to include these for the benefit of the committee and any folks watching at home as we go through the presentation. I'll try not to use acronyms as much as possible, but there's a lot of jargon in oil and gas, so we like to provide this as a reference. Slide 3 is the agenda for the presentation. So quite a number of topics we'll touch on. So I'll start by looking at the various sources of oil and gas revenue to the state, including how those revenue sources vary depending on the ownership of the land. And we'll talk about the revenue specific to Cook Inlet, including some tax changes that took place last year in Cook Inlet. Then we'll look at key metrics of oil and gas prices and production, lease expenditures, and tax credits. We have a order of operations walking through the steps of the production tax calculation, an analysis of distribution of profits in Cook Inlet, and then finally some information about Cook Inlet incentives, past, present, and potentially future. Include slide 4, the disclaimer, and anytime I'm talking about some of the nuances of production tax, we do have one of the more complicated tax systems out there. And just for the record, that I'm an economist, not an auditor, and anything that I say does not represent an official tax interpretation or determination. Also to mention that the numbers we're presenting are aggregate numbers. So company-specific tax calculations will be slightly different than the aggregate information that we're presenting in the presentation. So slide 5, looking at the various sources of oil and gas revenue to the state. So we have four primary sources. The royalty is the revenue to the owner of the land, whether that's the state or another landowner, private or federal. In Cook Inlet, the typical royalty rate is 12.5%, but the average royalty rate is around 10%. There's some leases that have reduced rates there in Cook Inlet. The corporate income tax applies to most, but not all of the oil and gas companies doing business in the state. I think it's noteworthy that not all of the companies in Cook Inlet are subject to the corporate income tax. But for the companies that are subject to the corporate income tax, that's a tax based on worldwide net income that's then apportioned to Alaska based on Alaska's share of worldwide property production and sales. And then the tax rates are applied to that. The maximum state corporate income tax rate is 9.4%. And the maximum federal corporate income tax rate is currently 21%. The state has a property tax that applies to all property anywhere within the state and within the 3-mile limit offshore. That's a 2% of assessed value or 20 mils tax. And then any local property tax is allowed as a credit against the state tax. So the company will pay the 2% of assessed value regardless of what the local property tax rate is. And then finally, the production tax, which is our severance tax on oil and gas, and we have some additional slides that will go into more detail on the production tax and how that's calculated in Cook Inlet.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Stickle, it's just a curiosity thing for me. The 10% royalty, you don't have to answer it now if you don't know. I'd like to know, is that pre-statehood lease royalty rates that were negotiated back in the day, or you know, or is it some private landowner? Or just I'm just curious.
Sure, Co-Chair Bishop, through the chair. So the around 10% is a weighted average royalty rate in Cook Inlet for production on state land. And we'd be happy to get you more detail on what comprises that. So I know there's some leases that are paying the full 12.5%, and then there's other leases that are paying a reduced royalty rate.
Any other questions? I had one. How many companies are working in Cook Inlet that might be subject to the corporate income tax?
Chair Giesel, I don't have an exact number off the top of my head. I know there's it's well known that there's one major producer in the Cook Inlet. There are several smaller producers and minor working interest owners, but we can take a look and see if we can provide a more specific number.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Senator Klayman.
Just more for clarity, you were mentioning the property tax, but the state property tax is just based on oil and gas properties. That's not any property in the state, but only these oil and gas properties?
Senator Klayman, through the chair, that's correct. So the state property tax is 20 mils on oil and gas property only.
One other follow-up.
Yes, follow-up.
So just walk me through again, if there's a 2% tax, how does the state tax, how does the municipal or local tax intersect with that? Is that on top of it, or is there a cap, or how does the local tax fit in with the 2%?
Yeah, Senator Klayman, through the chair, so practically the way it works is that the local tax is allowed as a tax credit against the state tax, so the company will end up paying the 20 mils or 2% regardless of what the local tax is.
One more follow-up.
Yes, follow-up.
Does that mean if the local tax was 5%, then they'd pay 5%, 3% to the local government and 2% to the state, or does that 5% all go to the local government and the state doesn't get any if the local government has a tax?
Yeah. Senator Klayman, through the chair, so I believe there's a limit on the ability of local governments to tax. I believe 5% would be above that limit. That's out a little beyond my area of expertise.
But let's say they're within the limit. If the limit is higher than the 2%, what happens then? Who gets the money?
Senator Klayman, through the chair, I believe the way it works, and I'd be happy to clarify and come back to the committee, no local governments are currently taxing above 20 mils or 2%. If they were to tax above the 20 mils or 2%, I believe the way it would work is that would offset the state tax entirely, so the state would not get any property tax. And there is at least one municipality that's taxing at the full 20 mils, and for any oil and gas property in that municipality, the state does not receive any property tax revenue.
Thank you.
Yes, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How do we define property, oil and gas property, I guess you'd say? That is to say, does it have to be directly involved in the production of oil and gas, or like the Hillcore building in Anchorage. Is that a property that's subject to this kind of tax?
Sure. Senator Dunbar, through the chair. So the property tax applies to property that's directly associated with oil and gas exploration, production, transportation.
So not their overhead administrative buildings.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Great, go ahead and proceed.
All right, so slide six touches on a topic that I touched on a little bit already, which is that not all production is the same. So the state's share of petroleum revenue varies depending on the land type. So production tax, corporate income tax, and property tax, those apply everywhere in the state and within the 3-mile limit offshore, regardless of the ownership of the land. Where we see a significant difference based on the ownership of the land is on the royalty piece of it. And in Cook Inlet, we do have a mix of state owner, private owner, and federal offshore. So for the federal offshore within the 3 to 6 miles offshore, there's a federal royalty, and 27% of that is shared back to the state. Within the state lands, we get the entire amount of the royalty revenue. And then within those private lands, it's a privately negotiated royalty with the landowner. The state does not get a direct share of the royalty revenue. However, we do levy a 5% tax on that private landowner royalty interest as part of the production tax. And I just find this slide to be a really good resource to kind of refer back to anytime we're talking about land ownership and how the revenue is different.
Good. I don't see any questions.
So slide six shows some details on the production tax in Cook Inlet, and I'll spend a minute kind of walking through this. So Cook Inlet production tax is a little different than the tax on the North Slope. We did have a change in production tax that took effect on January 1st of 2022. Prior to 2022, oil and gas were both subject to a net profits tax with a 35% tax on production tax value. There are no per taxable barrel credits in Cook Inlet. There's no gross minimum tax floor. So as far as the net profits tax calculation, it's a fairly simple tax calculation. And then prior to 2022, a company would allocate any lease. A company that was doing producing both oil and gas would allocate lease expenditures between oil and gas for purposes of having a separate tax calculation for oil and a tax calculation for gas. The change that took effect January 1st, 2022, is that we switched to a gross tax on gas. So gas now pays a 13% tax on gross value. And all lease expenditures are allowed to be deducted against the oil side of the tax calculation and that net profits tax. And that was a change that was originally put into place back in 2014 as part of Senate Bill 138 that was related to a potential major gas sale. That obviously we haven't had the major gas sale, but that statute remained in place, and so the gas switched to the gross tax last year. For Cook Inlet, there is a separate tax calculation for each field. There's a separate tax calculation for oil and gas within each field, so Cook Inlet is ring-fenced. There's a tax ceiling that applies. That tax ceiling is $1 per barrel for oil, and the tax ceiling it varies by field for gas, depending on for fields that were in production prior to the enactment of the Petroleum Profits Tax, or PPT, in April of 2006. For those fields, their tax ceiling is based on that field's average gas tax rate for the preceding 12 months prior to enactment of the PPT. And those rates vary anywhere from 0 to 24.7 cents per 1,000 cubic feet. For any fields that came into production after April of 2006, their tax ceiling is based on what was at the time the average tax ceiling of 17.7 cents per 1,000 cubic feet. What's happened over time is production has shifted to some of the lower tax ceiling fields on average. So in the most recent year, the weighted average tax ceiling in Cook Inlet is a little under 14 cents per 1,000 cubic feet. And then also to note, there were numerous tax credits that were put in place, a lot of them in 2006 and 2007 and then 2010 with the Cook Inlet Recovery Act. Most of those tax credits were repealed by 2018. So at this point in time, there's no significant tax credits. There is a few companies that are eligible for the small producer credit, which is phasing out.
Gotcha. Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair to Mr. Stickle. I want to be sure that I heard you correctly, where you said that the production had shifted to the lower tax rate fields. Was that indeed what you said?
Senator Kaufman, through the chair, that's correct. So the average tax ceiling back in 2006 when the tax ceilings took effect was the 17.7 cents per 1,000 cubic feet. That tax ceiling is now, the average is now a little under 14 cents per 1,000 cubic feet.
Follow-up?
Yes, follow-up.
I'm just curious if we can determine cause and effect of that. Is it just natural degradation of the higher price fields, or is indeed the tax regimen somehow working to help drive production in those tax-advantaged areas, if I'm hearing this correctly? Thank you.
Senator Kaufman, that's an excellent question. You're asking the right question. I don't have a specific answer on cause and effect. And
it's that good of a question. Thank you.
Yes, Senator Klayman.
Just for a memory refresh, the shift to the 13% gross value tax structure, when did we pass the law that made that, that had that come into effect? I'm just memory challenged.
Sure. Yeah, Senator Klayman through the chair. So that was Senate Bill 138, which was passed in 2014.
It actually was passed in 2014 to take effect 8 years later.
That's correct, Senator Klayman through the chair. So the part of the idea there was looking forward to a potential for a major gas sale.
Good. No other questions.
So slide 8 shows a 5 years of some information for Cook Inlet oil and gas revenue. For oil price, we don't separately track a Cook Inlet price. We use Alaska North Slope price as a proxy. So what you see here is our history and forecast for Alaska North Slope oil price. When you look at the different sales that are reported by companies, there's some variance, but this is roughly in the right ballpark. In terms of oil production, the forecast is produced by Department of Natural Resources as part of their regular production forecast. For gas prices, Department of Revenue publishes a prevailing value for gas prices in Cook Inlet, which is based on some publicly reported and average information there. We don't have an explicit gas price forecast for our modeling purposes. We assume that gas prices will increase with inflation over time. So what you see here in fiscal 24 and 25 is just the assumption of slowly growing gas prices with inflation. Looking at gas production, the gas production number here represents total gas offtakes. A significant share of production is gas used in operations, which is not subject to royalty or tax. But the numbers shown here represent the total gas taken off of the lease. This is the number that's going to be reported by the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission for consistency. And then beginning with this past fall forecast, we do actually have a separate forecast of gas production that comes from Department of Natural Resources. So they've gone and evaluated the various producing properties and potential new developments and provided the numbers that you see here for the forecast. In terms of the state revenue directly from Cook Inlet, the property tax shown here, this is the state share only. So we receive about $15 million a year in state share of property tax in Cook Inlet. Corporate income tax, which again applies to some but not all of the companies doing business in Cook Inlet. We expected to receive $10 million of corporate income tax this year and fairly steady for the next couple of years. Looking at production tax, that's been a fairly small revenue stream for the last several years from Cook Inlet. Essentially, companies have been able to apply credits to offset nearly all of their production tax outside of there's a hazardous release surcharge and a tax on private landowner royalty interest that they're not able to apply tax credits against. We are expecting that that effective this year, those credits will kind of be used up. And so we are expecting $5 to $6 million a year of positive revenue coming in fiscal 24 and 25. And then the royalties are the largest source of revenue that the state receives from Cook Inlet oil and gas production. The numbers shown here, we're looking at $60 million in the next fiscal year, $69 million this fiscal year. Those represent total royalty revenue to the state, which is not just the unrestricted portion, also the restricted portion to the permanent fund and school fund.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Stickle. Can you explain again, perhaps you already did, I just missed it, what caused the jump in corporate income tax from 2021 to 2022, going from $4 million to $13 million?
Sure, Senator Dunbar, through the chair. So fiscal year 2021 was a challenging year for corporate income tax generally. That reflects some of the negative impacts of the very low oil prices and the COVID pandemic, and a lot of companies were actually in a loss situation in 2020. Which is reflected in the fiscal 21 revenue.
Yes, follow up.
So there was no sort of legal change. It was a market it was a market and price change that caused that drop in 2021, and then we're projecting sort of to be more in that low single digit or low double digits or high single digits going forward.
Sure, Senator Dunbar through the chair. So there was one change at the federal level. So as part of the CARES Act, which is the major COVID relief package, any companies that had any corporations that had a net operating loss in tax years 2018, 2019, or 2020, they were allowed to carry back that net operating loss up to 5 years and receive refunds of prior year taxes paid. So that was also a compounding factor in fiscal year 21 revenue, in addition to the lower current year payments with the low oil prices.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions? All right, seeing none.
And just to clarify on that CARES Act piece, so Alaska corporate income tax, we adopt the federal tax code by reference as kind of the starting point for our tax code, and that's why the federal changes flowed through to the state corporate income tax. So moving into some of the indicators in Cook Inlet, we'll start first with Cook Inlet oil and gas prices. Again, we don't explicitly forecast Cook Inlet oil price, but it does track fairly closely to the North Slope. So what we've shown here is our 10-year history and forecast for North Slope oil prices, which we use as a proxy for Cook Inlet prices. In terms of gas prices, the price in Cook Inlet gas has been growing fairly steady over time each year, and we are forecasting growth with inflation, and you can see it is really just kind of continuing the recent trend there.
Don't see any questions on that one.
Slide 10 looks at Cook Inlet oil and gas production. So Cook Inlet being Alaska's first oil basin, oil and gas basin, first started production back in the 1950s, and oil production at one time peaked at over 230,000 barrels per day. That was in the early 1970s. So Cook Inlet is very much a mature basin. And for many years on the gas side of things, we were actually exporting natural gas. We were one of the first gas export projects in the world. That has since ceased, and we're again talking about potential concerns around gas supply in the Cook Inlet. For more recently, we saw a pretty significant increase in production, in oil production in particular, back in 2012. That coincided with higher oil prices. It coincided with generous tax credits, and it also coincided with Hilcorp entering the inlet and doing a lot of really important work there. According to the Department of Natural Resources and their latest production forecast, they are looking for some projects to come and lead to a fairly stable production outlook for both oil and gas over the next 10 years.
Well, you can really see the effects of the Cook Inlet Recovery Act and that uptick in production. And of course, those were cash credits that we were giving out and ultimately could not pay, and so had to delete. Yeah. Any questions on this slide? All right, seeing none.
And Madam Chair, that's a great segue into slide 11, which looks at lease expenditures. This is how much money are companies spending in Cook Inlet. And the story on this slide is if you have high oil prices, low taxes, and generous subsidies, you get investment. And that's absolutely what we saw from 2012 through 2015 timeframe. So very generous tax credits put into place with the Cook Inlet Recovery Act in 2010. And those were helps draw Hilcorp into the Cook Inlet. And that was in 2012 that they entered. And you can see the corresponding increase to, you know, $600, $650 million per year of capital spend in Cook Inlet. Then when those tax credits were repealed in 2016 with House Bill 247, you saw the investment start to drop off. And by 2018, most of the tax credits were repealed. The repeal of the credits also coincided with lower oil prices, which makes it very challenging to assign cause and effect when we're talking about the tax incentives. Operating costs have been fairly stable over the last decade or so. You see a kind of a drop in both capital and operating expenses in fiscal year 2021. That has a lot to do with the COVID pandemic. We had the companies pulling back on operations as much as they possibly could due to COVID concerns, as well as the lower oil prices that were in place at the time. We are expecting a little bit of a rebound in both capital and operating expenditures in fiscal year 2024. There are some small projects on the horizon, but generally the story is expecting fairly stable investment at the lower levels that we've seen for the last few years.
Senator Kaufman, question?
I'm through the chair to Mr. Stickles. So earlier, pondering the cause and effect nature, but I feel we can see pretty clear cause and effect where policy creating a beneficial environment definitely changed the trend line. And so, with that, would it be safe to assume that there's pretty good chance of a linkage with the tax policy on the production on the previous slide that we were talking about, at least some sort of indicator of it, if not proof?
Sure. Senator Kaufman, through the chair, in terms of the incentives in the Cook Inlet Recovery Act, those were very generous incentives. And I think we can say with certainty that they were effective in increasing investment. Now, to say exactly what would have happened, would there have been some increase in investment absent those credits due to the higher oil price environment, that gets a little harder to tease out. But as far as answering yes, no, did the credits generate additional investment in production? I think the answer is yes.
Thank you.
No other questions on this one.
And slide 12 looks at those tax credits again for non-North Slope. So throughout the presentation, there's a few places where we've used this term non-north slope. What we've done there is we've aggregated the Cook Inlet information with a small amount of credits or spending for the Middle Earth area. So there's just a small amount with a couple of producers. So to help honor confidentiality, we group those together into one category that we call non-north slope. So the credits against liability, which are in the orange bar and the smaller numbers, these include capital expenditure credits, net operating loss credits, well, lease expenditure credits. Those have all been repealed, and then also include the small producer credit that is currently in the process of being phased out, not available for any new companies, but some companies can use that credit up through 2025. The credits for state purchase, which are the blue numbers, and this represents just the non-North Slope share. These include things like capital expenditure credit, net operating loss credit, well lease expenditure credit. There's some exploration credits. We had gas storage facility credit, liquefied natural gas storage facility credit, and refinery investment credits under the corporate income tax code. Those have all been repealed at this point, repealed or sunset. But there are some of those credits available for purchase that are still on the books, and that represents the blue line here. And we are forecasting a total estimated appropriation of $312 million in fiscal year 2023 for tax credits for purchase. That represents a spring forecast estimate of $252 million, which is based on 10% of our estimate for production tax levied before credits for the entire state. And then there was also a $60 million supplemental appropriation made in the 23 budget. Of that total of $312 million of credits for purchase in 2023, $166 million of that is estimated to be non-North Slope credits, which is shown on the blue bar here. And then the balance into fiscal year 2024, which would completely retire all of these credits once and for all, we're estimating a remaining $56 million statewide, of which $47 million is the non-North Slope portion.
Good. No questions.
Excellent. So the committee, when we came before the committee last month, asked us to provide some information about the non-North Slope tax credits and what the effectiveness of these purchase tax credits has been. And so these next two slides address that question. So there was $1.7 billion of non-North Slope tax credits through the end of calendar year 2021. That's the latest data that we have. A small portion of that, less than $100 million, was used against tax liabilities, and the remaining $1.6 billion of those credits were earned and eligible for state purchase. 1.4 of the 1.6 have been purchased. $88 million of those were transferred to other companies for use against tax liability. And then there's the $149 million outstanding as of the end of 2022. And then again, as we mentioned previously, all of the credits available for purchase have been eliminated. The small producer credit is the only credit that remains in Cook Inlet, and that's going to be phasing out completely in the next couple of years.
Any questions on this slide? Seeing none.
So slide 14 kind of correlates those numbers with some of the activity that we've seen from the companies receiving the credits. So for the $1.4 billion of credits that have been purchased for non-North Slope, lease expenditures for the companies receiving those credits totaled $5.7 billion through the end of 2022. So credits essentially supported 24% of the lease expenditures that we've seen thus far. And of those $1.4 billion of credits, $1.1 billion of them went to companies that did have commercial production by the end of 2022. That production totaled 180 million barrels of oil equivalent. So the credits equate to about $6.14 per barrel of oil equivalent, or about $1.02 per 1,000 cubic feet of gas of production for the companies that received those credits. And then the remaining $261 million of credits went to companies that have not yet achieved regular commercial production. These numbers in terms of the share of lease expenditures and the cost per unit of production, they will get smaller over time as those companies continue to spend money going forward and continue to have additional production.
Good. No questions.
Slide 15 is another request from last time we came before the committee. Requested to provide a illustration of the production tax calculation for Cook Inlet, similar to the order of operations that we presented for North Slope many times in the past. So this is an aggregate calculation that kind of looks at the nuts and bolts of the Cook Inlet production tax calculation. I've broken this up into three slides. So we have the oil tax calculation, the gas tax calculation, and then the final tax after credits. And this looks at fiscal year 2024 forecast data. So we're forecasting about 8,000 barrels per day of oil production in Cook Inlet with an average wellhead price of $63.39 per barrel. And that equates to about $500,000 per day of value, or $185 million per year of value for the oil in Cook Inlet. Again, about a 10% average royalty rate in Cook Inlet, which leaves $166 million of gross value at the point of production, and this is the basis for the tax calculation. For Cook Inlet, all lease expenditures can be deducted against the oil tax calculation. So what we've shown here is that the company is able to apply lease expenditures to completely offset that gross value at point of production and bring their production tax value to zero. And then there's an additional $250 million of lease expenditures that are essentially foregone in this aggregate calculation. There's no tax credit for those expenditures. There's no provision for carry forward annual losses. So those are essentially foregone. The 35% net profits tax rate applies to the production tax value. In this case, 35% of zero is zero. There is the tax ceiling on oil, which is $1 per barrel of taxable production. That would work out to $2.6 million for the oil tax ceiling. And you take the lesser of that tax ceiling, or the tax before ceiling, so the oil production tax is essentially zero in Cook Inlet.
No question. Oh, there is a question. Senator Clayman.
Effectively, how long has the production tax been zero in Cook Inlet?
Senator Clayman, through the chair, so the tax ceiling of zero was what was put in place in 2006. So the average tax for the 12 months ending 2006 was the zero. The legislature actually raised that to a $1 per barrel tax ceiling with House Bill 247 in 2016. So the tax ceiling was actually zero, and the tax ceiling actually went to the $1 in 2017. But as you can see, with the 2022 tax changes allowing all of the lease expenditures against oil, the effective tax is zero on oil.
Good. Any other questions? Seeing none.
So slide 16 looks at the gas side of the tax calculation. For fiscal year 2024, we're forecasting a price of $8.06 per 1,000 cubic feet. We're forecasting 196 million cubic feet per day of production, for a daily value of $1.6 million, or an annual value of $577 million. Gas used in operations is not subject to tax or royalty, so that gets deducted from the calculation, as does the royalty. So our gross value at point of production for tax purposes is $424 million in fiscal year 24. And it's a pretty simple calculation. The 13% gross tax rate applies to the $424 million, giving us about $55 million of production tax on gas before the tax ceiling. The weighted average tax ceiling is 13.7 cents per 1,000 cubic feet. That works out to $7.2 million, and that tax ceiling ends up becoming the gas production tax.
Yes, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize. I didn't ask this question. If we go back one slide to the oil tax calculation, and again, I'm sorry if I missed this. The fact that the deductible operating and capital expenditures exactly match the gross value point of production, that can't be a coincidence, right? So would they actually be higher but for something?
Yes, Senator Dunbar, through the chair. So in this aggregate calculation, we assume that the producer would offset their entire gross value at point of production with those lease expenditures of $166 million. And then if you look at the line right below that, non-deductible lease expenditures, there's about $250 million of additional spending that for all intents and purposes is foregone in the tax calculation. And so the total lease expenditures we're forecasting is the sum of those 250 and 165, so a little over $400 million.
And you've done it. Two-thirds, one-third split for sort of convenience sake, or is that actually what you think the breakdown is between operating and capital?
Senator Dunbar, through the chair, so that's the actual ratio between operating and capital. What I've done for slide 15 is prorated the total operating and total capital down to the $166 million.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good. No more questions? Slide 17.
So moving on to slide 17. So added together, the oil and gas taxes are expected to be $7.2 million before application of tax credits. In fiscal year 24, we're forecasting $2.4 million of Cook Inlet tax credits against liability. These are small producer credits for some of the companies that are still eligible for those credits. And then a few other adjustments, which include the hazardous release surcharge and tax on private landowner royalty interest, add $0.2 million. So the total tax paid to the state that we're forecasting is $5 million for production tax from Cook Inlet in fiscal year 2024. Do want to reiterate, this is an aggregate calculation. So the actual taxes in Cook Inlet are levied separately for each field. So there is a full ring fencing in place in Cook Inlet. So some fields and companies would have a higher or lower tax burden than the aggregate illustration here. But I think the illustration does give you a sense of the mechanics of how the production tax calculation works.
So a question, Mr. Stickle. There's a new bill out there, a new piece of legislation, right, that would institute a corporate income tax, or excuse me, an income tax on S corporations. Is Cook Inlet excluded from that? How is Cook Inlet perhaps excluded?
Sure, Chair Giesel. So the proposal, I believe you're speaking to Senate Bill 114.
Yes, I think that is the number. Yeah.
So one of the provisions of that piece of legislation would be to essentially extend the corporate income tax to non-C corporations or pass-through entities, and that would apply statewide. So that would affect production on the North Slope as well as Cook Inlet and anywhere else in the state.
Okay, thank you for that. I had thought there was an income category, you know, companies above a certain revenue level would be included, those below that would not be. Is that not a feature of the bill? I don't know.
No, Chair Giesel, you're correct. So the proposal in Senate Bill 114 would tax income over $4 million per company from these pass-through entities at a 9.4% tax rate.
Thank you. So $4 million is the
That's
trillion. Trigger. $4 million is the trigger. Thank right. you.
So the very smallest companies or companies with very little income would not be subject to the tax.
Gotcha. Thank you for that. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Because you brought up SB 114, going back to slide 10 briefly, so the department is projecting sort of due in large part to the natural decline of the field that gas, oil and gas production are going to fall substantially in the coming years. And that is under the current tax structure, correct?
Senator Dunbar, through the chair, that's correct.
All right. I don't see any other questions.
All right. Moving on to slide 18. So another request from last time we came before the committee was to look at an estimate of how profits in Cook Inlet are distributed. So we've put this analysis together based on our spring 2023 forecast for fiscal year 2024. We've assumed a typical barrel of oil, a typical 1,000 cubic feet of gas, and then have an example where we've combined them to do a barrel of oil equivalent. We've assumed a single taxpayer on state land with a 12.5% royalty. And we've assumed the weighted average tax ceiling for gas and made some simplifying rule of thumb assumptions for property tax and corporate income tax. We do show the analysis with and without corporate income tax to acknowledge that not all companies in Cook Inlet are subject to that tax. So slide 19 looks at the distribution of profits for a typical barrel of oil in the state. So we assume a wellhead value of $63.39 per barrel. For costs, we assume that those take up about $30.79 per barrel, which leaves $32.60 of profit per barrel of oil in Cook Inlet. With the state corporate income tax included, the state gets about 30% of the profit. Municipal property tax amounts to about 3%. And federal corporate income tax amounts to about 14%, leaving a little over $17 per barrel or 53% of profit to the producer. Without the state corporate income tax included, the state gets 27% of the profit and the producer's share goes up to 55%. Should mention for the without state corporate income tax example, we've still assumed the 21% federal corporate income tax rate. Another alternative would be to use a higher federal rate that would reflect more of an individual income tax rate for a pass-through entity. But just wanted to mention that that was the assumption included in this slide, is the 21%.
Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair to Mr. Stickle. So it's often discussed that Cook Inlet is running out of gas, and I think what is really going on is that the economics have been oil production with gas as sort of a byproduct that helps sweeten the pot. And so we have these distribution of profits here. As there are calls for renewable energy, I'm just wondering what the distribution of profits would look like if we started to put a solar panel farm or a wind farm up next to this as we start to transition. I know it's kind of an apples and oranges comparison, but I think it would be a pretty thin profit coming back to the state off of that, unless there's some tax regime that I don't know of. Can you just explain what there might be in if we do transition? There's calls to transition to 80% renewables, and if we do, there's a big chunk of revenue that's going to disappear, I think.
Sure. Senator Kaufman to the chair. That's an interesting question. So state royalty wouldn't apply in most cases. I believe there may be some provisions around geothermal that would be a question for Department of Natural Resources. Obviously, we don't have a production tax on renewable energy. In certain, the state's property tax would not apply to a renewable energy project. Municipal property tax could apply. State could receive state corporate income tax potentially, depending on the entity that's doing the work. And obviously, federal taxes would apply potentially.
Follow up, Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. So I think that's a real eye opener for those that are, you know, really chomping at the bit to pursue that transition to renewables. I would think that what this points out is that there's multiple reasons for us to come up with some kind of sweet spot as far as the revenue produced versus the production attained of those two opposing curves of taxation versus production. I guess that's more of a comment than a question, but if there's any other way to look at it, I'd like to know. Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none.
So slide 20 looks at a similar chart, but looking at gas. One thing you will notice looking between slide 19 and slide 20 is that the lease expenditures share for gas is much higher. So there's less profit to go around per unit of gas production than there is per unit of oil production. But looking at the gas production, we're assuming an average wellhead value of $8.06 per 1,000 cubic feet, $5.12 of that being taken up by those costs, leaving $2.94 per 1,000 cubic feet of profit to be shared between the different entities. With corporate income tax included, 46% of that goes to the state, 6% of that goes to municipal property tax, and 10% goes to the federal government, leaving $1.12 or 38% to the producer. And then without state corporate income tax included, the state share goes down to 44% and the producer's share goes up to about 40%.
Good.
And then slide 21 is just basically combining the last two slides and looking at all Cook Inlet production on a barrel of oil equivalent basis. That equivalent assumes that one barrel of oil is the same as 6,000 cubic feet of gas. So on the with state corporate income tax side of things, the state gets about 40% of profit and the producer gets about 43%. And then without state corporate income tax, the state gets 38% of profit and producer gets 45% of profit.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to start by just thanking you for this graphic. I think it's much more illustrative, I think, than a lot of the things we get. It seems to very clearly set this out in a way that is very, I hope, digestible by the public. So thank you for that. And what it sort of highlights to me is that the corporate income tax change that is being proposed in 114 that would shift from some entities now don't have this corporate income tax, having corporate income tax, the difference would be about 2% or 2 percentage points, rather, shifting from the producer to the state. And still, after all of their lease expenditures, they still have this fairly healthy profit margin. I mean, is that sort of what you are illustrating with these? I guess healthy is subjective, but it is a 2% difference. Is that right?
Senator Dunbar, through the chair, that's correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Again, based on this aggregate calculation, and each producer is going to have different economics, and each field is going to have slightly different economics.
And thank you for that distinction. That is important to remember. Any other questions? All right, we're on slide 22.
Sure, and so the last three slides, we were asked to provide some information about Cook Inlet incentives. And so I've looked at this three ways. So I looked at some of the incentives that have been in place for the last two decades. I looked at current incentives and then we brainstorm some ideas about potential future incentives. So the last two decades were really kind of an arc where various incentives were put into place, starting with exploration tax credit in 2003, additional tax credits added with the petroleum profits tax in 2006, and with the Alaska Clear and Equitable Share, or ACES, in 2007. And then in 2010, the very significant increases in tax credits with the Cook Inlet Recovery Act. And then towards the end of the 2010s, in 2016 and 2017, we saw things move the other direction, and credits sunsets and were put into place, and limits on state purchase were put into place. And at this point, nearly all of those credits have been eliminated. All of the credits for state purchase have been eliminated. And the only real credit that remains is that small producer credit that we discussed. So slide three looks at what are some of the current incentives available in Cook Inlet. So there's...
Yes, Senator Bishop.
I just wanted to point out one thing while we're here, just because we've got a bill up in front of us in Senate Finance 114, but you look at 2016-247, House Bill 247, House Bill 111, those were both changes to the original SB 21 that was introduced in 2013. So we've changed tax policy twice already on the original SB 21, in 2016 and 2017.
That's true, though, that was specifically for Cook Inlet. Yep. Cashable credits. Yep.
Yeah, that's correct, Co-Chair Bishop. So 2016 and the 247 and 111 were both modifications to the Senate Bill 21. Slide 23, looking at what are some of the current incentives. So on the oil side of things, the ability to apply all lease expenditures against the oil tax, that's a bit of an incentive. As we saw in the order of operations, walk through, that can allow oil taxes to go essentially to zero. The tax ceilings that are in place for oil and gas are an incentive. As we saw on the gas side, absent the tax ceiling, the tax on gas would be quite a bit higher than what is actually being paid. So we have fairly low production tax rates for the Cook Inlet. Low rate is always an incentive for investment. But we don't have those tax credits currently available. The lack of a corporate income tax for certain companies could be seen as an incentive in Cook Inlet. And then there are provisions for royalty relief that can be available in certain instances through Department of Natural Resources.
And no questions on that slide.
So my final slide, slide 24, is a list of possible options for future Cook Inlet incentives that the legislature could consider if there was, interest in trying to increase gas or energy supply in Cook Inlet. So this was kind of based on an internal brainstorm in our group. It's not an exhaustive list. Certainly does not recommend, is not an administration recommendation or endorsement. Just want to make that clear. And when you're thinking about Cook Inlet, it's important to keep in mind that there is one major producer. So as far as considering different incentives, it would be important to get the input of that producer and understanding what would kind of move the needle for them and their decision-making going forward. But some of the ideas that we came up with, starting with tax changes, that's where we live, and the tax division is thinking about taxes. You could do a tax holiday. You could remove the ring fencing provisions in Cook Inlet to allow companies to write off investments against other fields' production taxes. This tax ceilings could be further reduced. There could be different tax holidays. We could bring back some tax credits in some form to incent certain activities. There could be work to help with funding or bringing new fields into production in different ways. helping investment, loan guarantees, direct funding. And then finally, the last set of options really has to do with reducing the need for gas coming from the Cook Inlet. And that would be helping to bring in gas from elsewhere, either through imports or through an in-state gas pipeline, or by helping to encourage renewable energy projects in some way.
Good. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just really briefly, and I think this might be a question better suited for DNR than revenue, but one of the challenges I've heard about gas in Cook Inlet is that actually our market is too small to justify some of these investments, that they're too high risk given the relatively limited market. And so perhaps, sort of ironically, maybe going in the opposite direction and increasing our gas consumption would lead to more investment and opening up some of these fields. Now, we're not going to start burning gas willy-nilly, but there's been talk of, you know, reopening exports or the Donlin mine, which is going to need something like 35, whatever the member's measurement is per year. Do you have any thoughts on that, or has your department talked about that?
Sure. Senator Dunbar, through the chair. So I guess from my perspective, there's definitely kind of a chicken and egg issue where, one it may be challenging to commit to a major additional source of supply, whether that's a imports or pipeline or major investment in a new field, without knowing if the demand is going to be there. And at the same time, it's difficult to commit to the demand side of things without knowing that the supply is going to be there. And so that's where, you know, some of the ideas here around, potential to look at funding or loan guarantees or ways of developing gas or incentives for bringing in additional supply, there could potentially be a state role there in helping bring that market together.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, when you talk about the funding or loan guarantees, of course, I think of companies like Bluecrest that know there's a gas deposit offshore, but they don't have the wherewithal, the financial wherewithal to bring it into production. Any other questions, comments on the potential options? Senator Bishop?
Just, whatever we do, it's a policy call, right? And you got to look at all the math. So what's the goal for Cook Inlet, right? We got to determine what's that question first, and then, you're going to have to look at what's the import price versus the incentive price, and then you got to weigh it out. I mean, you sit at the finance table and you look at revenues to the state of Alaska, and we just have to be smart with our spend. That's all I'm saying.
Yes. Any other? Yes, Senator Kaufman.
I just, first off, through the chair, I just want to say thank you. I always enjoy hearing from you. And as far as the goal, I think what we have to do policy-wise is find the sweet spot with those two curves, that which gains revenues but doesn't inhibit production. And I think the devil's in the details around all that, right? We sure don't want to kill the goose that continues to lay the golden eggs. So just a comment, but thank you.
Yes, that would be a solution, but Senator Bishop and I have been there, done that. It was no fun to repeal those cash credits. There were people that counted on them and went bankrupt because we didn't pay them promptly. So, in any case, but I see there's additional documents here that you provided, a letter to the committee about some of the questions that we had, and then you also gave us a document about the will of project fiscal analysis. So thank you very much for that, Mr. Stickle.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the great references. Thank you for the presentation today. So that ends our agenda today. The next meeting will be Monday, April 3rd at 3:30. On the agenda, we will have the governor's appointees for the Board of Fish and for the Big Game Commercial Services Board. In addition, we'll be hearing HB 103, Extend Alaska Minerals Commission, Senate Bill 78, Hunting and Fishing License for Non-Resident Students. And to answer the burning question, yes, we will also be meeting on Wednesday, April 5th next week. So at this time, we will adjourn. The time is 4:36 p.m.